Welcome to Deacon Dialogues, bringing you a deacon's perspective on the world we live in and the Catholic faith we are called to. And now, here are your hosts, Deacon Rich Napoli and his wife, Janet.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Deacon Rich Napoli, and you're listening to Deacon Dialogues. I'm joined today, as always, by my lovely wife, Janet. And it's been a while since we've been on here. We've had a wonderful summer, busy summer.
Yes.
We took actually July off, I think, from this show. But we're back, and we're excited to be back. We're a little exhausted, perhaps, right, Jenna, from this past month?
We are. It's been exciting. All three of our children have moved to another location. Two are going to graduate school, one in Boston, the other in Florida. And our married daughter has just bought her first home with her husband. And so we were helping them move into their new place in Virginia. So, I mean, we're just up and down the East Coast.
All three kids, and I think our backs are a little the worst for the wear.
Moving
very those,
joyful, though.
Books, but all good stuff.
But I am thrilled with a capital T about today's program, Rich.
I know you are, and so am I. It's been a wonderful topic. We're going to be talking about theology of the body. And I would take this moment just to advise the listeners that might have young children today. This is an adult topic, and if you have very young children, you may want to just choose to listen to the repeat show on this at Sunday at 2 o'clock, or listen to this when it's archived on the web.
I wish we can go to www.holyspiritradio.org. All the local programs for Holy Spirit Radio are archived, and probably next week, at the middle of the week, this one will be too.
Yeah, and this will be a live call-in show, so that those of you who have questions as we go through, I'll introduce our guest in a second. As we go through this program, if you should have questions, feel free to reach out and call us at 215-345-1570. That's 215-345-1570.
And the reason I'm thrilled, Rich, is because if somebody asked me, what was the most important teaching that you've ever passed on to your children? And let's face it, folks, parents are the main instructors of the church, the primary instructors of the faith for their children. I would say, hands down, theology of the body, this great gift that Pope John Paul II has given us. That has enabled me as a parent, as us as parents, to really help our children understand the gift of their sexuality and what that means, the depth of it. So you must listen to today's program if you're a parent out there, or maybe you're a person yourself struggling with the many issues that we're facing today. This is the program for you.
Yeah, and that was the flip side of what you said is, you know, it's often these very topics on sexual ethics and sexual morality that angers so many that disagree with the church. Most people have an issue with some aspect of the church, winds up coming back to one of these topics about, you know, sexual expression and contraception and abortion, in vitro fertilization, pornography, things like that are all issues that people struggle with sometimes. And yet the church has a beautiful message to share on that, that draws us up, not brings us down. And so to help us today with that discussion, we're going to introduce June Matwijik. We first met in our diaconate formation program. We had a workshop on the theology of the body. And
I was so thrilled that day.
Yeah, it was a topic we had come to love already. And to hear June, instruct us all, it was just a beautiful introduction to her. And since then, we've found June at our parish at St. Andrews, where I'm assigned to. But let me introduce June. She, just as by way of background, June has her master's degree in psychology from LaSalle, and also a master's in theology from St. Charles, right here in a seminary. And she teaches theology at Immaculata University. She also teaches for the Church Ministry Institute and leads the Endow program, which is a program that helps educate women on the nature and dignity of women in general. She is still a psychotherapist, or had been a psychotherapist, working inpatient as well as having a private practice. And she's the founder of the iCatholic Academy, which we may get a chance to hear about a little later.
And she's local.
She lives here, as I said. She's in our parish, St. Andrews. Yes. She's married with a 9-year-old daughter. So welcome, June.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on the show.
So happy to be here.
Yeah, we're excited. This is such a rich topic, as
it
you
is.
Know. And we were chatting before the show started, and we were thinking, like, wow, this show's going to go so fast because we're all so excited by the topic of it. But, you know, let me start off, you know, as you know, that I was away from the church for many years, and I certainly had some of these views, and I know these kinds of, I'm going to give you some representative statements of what people think that the church thinks or teaches about this notion of sexual ethics. And I think, you know, you've either in my case, I've actually said some of these things, but you've certainly heard these kinds of statements about, you know, that crazy church, you know, that it's a bunch of old men, you know, trying to stop you from having some fun in life, or, you know, how dare they tell me what to do in the bedroom when they got their own problems with all the scandals and so on, or that they're just out of touch. You know, maybe that was appropriate thinking, you know, for years gone by, but it just doesn't apply in this modern world of ours. Or that, you know, that the church thinks that sex is really just something to be tolerated for the procreation of children, but not to be enjoyed, right? And yet we know, as we're going to talk about today, the church's view on that is entirely different than that in some very fundamental ways. And that the church has been teaching this all along, I guess maybe. Well, what's changed? I mean, why is there this, you know... What do we have to do? We have anything new to say, or is there some new way of saying it that's come out in the last 30, 40 years?
Well, I think the message is the same. I mean, the church teaching is the same, but we continually look for new ways to express that and new language to express it, given the culture that we live in. And Pope John Paul has done a beautiful job of this in his Theology of the Body, which originally began as a series of radio addresses that were put on the radio, but they were his papal audiences between September 1979 and November 1984. And in this Theology of the Body, it really looks at the total vision of man.
Hmm. What does that mean? So the total vision of man, as you know, that could be a pretty lofty subject, but as it relates to... You know, the
purpose in life.
Our purpose in life.
Right. Absolutely. The purpose of, you know, why we were created, you know, what our bodies mean. How are we supposed to find happiness and fulfillment? So all of that, as opposed to a very, shall we say, utilitarian view that looks more at using people as objects and things rather than like a personalistic view, which really looks more towards man's whole being.
Yeah. And I think that was sort of one of the early, you know, sort of awakenings I had, just to see how the church teaches that sex is part of something, you know, one of God's greatest gifts to us.
Right.
And part of this beautiful expression of marital union and sort of, you know, participating in a human trinity of sorts, that, you know, you just kind of lose that in today's culture. You're never really exposed to that. You're always taught that, you know, the church taught you anything is like, don't. But as you were saying earlier, you know, never the reason why.
Right. And I think that's what we need to continue to do, is to find new ways to preach, and not to preach, but really just to talk about the beautiful teaching that's been given to us right there in Scripture. And Pope John Paul, you know, really focuses in, and even before the Theology of the Body, in his book Love and Responsibility, I mean, he really focuses on what does it mean to love? What is love? You know, and our culture so often reduces love to, again, just using somebody. Pope John Paul II terms our culture the culture of death, because we tend to use people. We tend to objectify people, see them as things, right. You know, as opposed to love being really making a gift of yourself to someone
and
else.
Sacrifice. Yes.
Right. Right. And that's, you know, that's what Jesus comes to show us how to do, is to love. And so we need to look at love not just in the context of sexual love, but in, you know, that whole dimension of what it means to truly be gifted to other people.
Right, and how that is for most of us, a once-in-a-lifetime gift.
Right,
that is
right.
Shared with a single person throughout life.
Right, absolutely, yes.
To join us and bind us together. Maybe you can, obviously this is going to be a rich topic, and there's lots of things we can talk about, but maybe we start with sort of the fundamental principles of Theology of the Body. So, you know, if you had to describe it at its highest levels, what is the church saying about, the role of sex within a marriage, the role of our bodies as an expression back to God? You know, where does it start?
Right. Well, Pope John Paul starts his Theology of the Body by really taking us back to the Garden of Eden and looking at what it was like before original sin. And he talks about man's origin, that is our time before original sin. And he breaks it down and he looks at man's solitude when Adam was alone in the garden before Eve is created. Right. And then he looks at nakedness And then he goes on to look at unity, these three dimensions. And he says in these three dimensions, there's an echo of all of us, in all of us, of what it was like before original sin. Mm-hmm. And what happens in original sin, right, is that Adam and Eve are, you know, given a test, as we all are. And their test is really focuses on, and Pope John Paul will say, it's a questioning of the gift. Because all they had to do was stand there with their arms out and receive all that God wanted to give them. Mm-hmm. He wanted to give them his love, right? And they were able to love as God loved. But what happens is in the rejection, in the taking of the forbidden fruit, is that God's love kind of gets cast out of their hearts. And then love gets turned around. So instead of being other-focused, it really becomes a self-seeking love. Mm. And he says this is the journey that we all really have to deal with now, because we're all been affected by original sin.
Right.
And
right.
So we've got to get this notion of what it means to truly, authentically love as God loves. Mm. We have to really look at how it was in the beginning, before original sin.
Very good. Okay. So I think that's an important thing to remember, too, is that, you know, there was a time when men and women had, that the gift of that union as free gift to start with. We
right.
kind of rejected that, but we're still drawn to that, that we can achieve that or strive towards it, maybe never
right.
achieve it, but strive towards
right. through
that,
God's grace,
that
yes.
same goal, right. that same kind of unity that Adam and Eve enjoyed before the fall.
Absolutely.
And that's the kind we will enjoy in heaven.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right, right. You know, sometimes when we talk about you're trying to explain the church's teaching on theology of the body and the church's teaching on the beauty and dignity of sexual union within a marriage, there's obviously lots of expressions of that, and people oftentimes look at the church and you have the church seemingly contradicts itself when it, it has different views, but I mean, there's the topics of things like contraception and homosexuality and in vitro fertilization and, sex outside of marriage. All of those seem to be, and I used to think of them coming in before I was in the church, that each one of those is an individual topic and it has, sort of a potential, you could decide one way or the other on each individual topic. Mm-hmm. And couldn't really come to understand the church's teaching on any one of those topics. And really, you really have to understand the church's teaching and God's teaching on what the purposes of sex within marriage are, if there's such a thing as a purpose. But that sex is given to us by God as a wonderful gift, and it has some, God gives it to us for some goals, for some purposes, and that if we understand those goals, then actually you may still choose to disagree with the church, but as I said to you before, you will no longer be able to say it's irrational or inconsistent. So why don't you describe those two those twin goals of the purposes of sexual union?
The purpose of sexuality really is union and procreation. And I think we have to go back and look at a couple of things first before we look at that. And okay. One thing is we have to understand that we're not just body, that we're body and spirit, body and soul. And what we do with our body affects our soul, and what we do with our soul affects our body. And there's a tendency in our culture to reduce sex, the act of sex and sexuality, to just a material dimension.
An activity.
Right. Even a sport, whatever.
Yes.
As opposed to the integration of the body, soul. Okay. And so when we speak about the purpose of sexuality in God's plan, it's for union and procreation. Now, what does that mean? Well, to kind of break it down, and I like what Christopher West, the way he explains the beautiful teaching of Pope John Paul II, it's like sex is speaking a language. Our bodies have the ability to speak a language. For example, I read in this book who gives an analogy of, Judas gives a kiss to Jesus. Okay, now a kiss is usually meaning what? Love, affection, compassion,
yeah.
affection,
right.
right. Because the body speaks a language through this kiss. But his body wasn't speaking that, right? His kiss was speaking something else,
right.
one of betrayal.
Right.
So his body spoke something other than what
he intended.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, where I'm heading with this is in marriage, right, what the words we speak at the altar are, I give myself totally to you,
yes.
right.
to be with you forever,
mm-hmm.
right, faithfully, I'm open to the gift of life, mm-hmm. right? Because we say, you know, will you be open to the gift of life and have mm-hmm. children, okay? And freely, you're come here not through duress, not through anything else, but because you want to make a gift of yourself to someone else, right? And so the body now in the marital act, in the sexual act, is actually speaking what the words were spoken at the altar.
This is perfection
right,
to me.
Right. I give
Listen
myself
carefully. Say
totally,
this again.
Faithfully, fruitfully, and freely. Now, faithfully, right, because you're saying till death do us part. It's a sacramental.
Right.
Nothing will destroy that bond,
right?
Right? That gift, that irrevocable gift of self.
Mm.
And this is what our body speaks in sex. And Pope John Paul II says that if we're contracepting, if we're engaged in same-sex relations, if there's adultery, infidelity, he says our bodies are speaking a lie
right.
because they're not speaking and expressing that I've given myself totally, faithfully, fruitfully, and freely.
And it is so beautiful when you think about it that every time a husband and wife come together in a sacramental marriage, in that covenant that they made before God, they are, with their bodies, saying their wedding vows to each other, that body language. It doesn't get any better than that. When you understand that, you don't need to click into what society is telling you, all these tricks, and let's like up the ante, and let's try this, let's jazz this up, that up. You don't need to jazz it up. I mean, that is the supreme, beautiful gift that God gives us, to enter into that love with Him,
right.
with Him.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, let's just take a second, just to remind folks that, you're listening to Deacon Dialogues. I'm your host, Deacon Rich Napoli, here with my wife, Janet. And our guest today is June Matwijik, who is an expert on the theology of the body, and she's here helping us understand the beautiful gift of sexuality as part of God's gift to us. And if you have questions for June or for any of us here, please feel free to call us at 215-345-1570. That's 215-345-1570. We'll be on till 5 o'clock. So I'm sorry, June. Now getting back to your topic there. So, you know, we are body and spirit.
Right.
And that's something body and, well, spirit, soul.
Soul, right.
In fact, somebody was saying once, somebody famous said, you know, when talking about body and soul, is like, you know, you don't, some people say you have a soul and you are a body. He says, no, you are a soul. You have a body. that really, we're fundamentally a soul first. Our bodies will be here for a while until, and it won't be with us until.
Right, like the body is the form of the soul.
It's a form of the soul. It's an expression of our soul in this world.
Right.
And
I think we also need to understand that love is spiritually expressed in the body. I mean, love isn't something
right.
necessarily concrete. You know, I would say to my students when I would teach, I'd say, well, show me love, you know, and they would show me symbols of love, like a flower, a kiss, right? But we can't see it because it's spiritual.
Right.
It's expressed, and it's expressed in and through the body, just
right.
what you were saying.
Right.
But yet no one would say, I have not experienced love, because people have experienced love, right? The love of our parents, there's all different kinds of loves.
Right.
And everyone's willing to say, love is real. But they can't point to it, right?
And everybody wants it.
And everybody wants it, right? Because we were made
yes.
to want that,
yes.
right? We were made and to be filled with that, and only God can do that for us.
Right. And as you said, the body, the soul expresses itself through the body, and so, you know, the gift of sexuality is our expression to our partner, our spouse, of what our soul is trying to say to them.
Right, of what we spoke in the marriage vows.
We spoke in the marriage
vows. Absolutely. And every time, kind of like what you were saying, it's so beautiful because it's a reenactment of the marriage vows. You're saying over and over again every time you make love is, you know, I'm giving myself to you.
I'm thinking of my husband where he says, would you like to renew your wedding vows?
That's like our code word.
You don't have to have that, you know, renew your wedding vows every 5 years or 10 years or whatever. You can do it every single time.
That's right. Right, and grace.
Yes, God's grace is beautiful
and
abundant.
Absolutely. And I think when used in its proper context, in the way that God designed it, it is so beautiful. It is so magnificent. And this is really what the church is trying to let people know, that, you know, the church, it should be in the bedroom in a way, because it's sacramental.
Right.
It's sacred,
right.
You know. Sex is sacred.
And really, when you enter into it the way it's meant to be, it's a bit of heaven.
Right.
It's a little bit, a taste of heaven. And that's what the beauty is.
Right. You really, when you come together as a man and wife in the state of marriage.
Total giving and receiving.
You're totally giving and totally receiving. You are, you know, we're going to talk about the unitive and procreative again, but you are procreating. I kind of kid around. You are creating with the pro. You are you are coming together in a sacramental union, and you are sharing in God's creative power in a way that's unique on this planet. There's no other way you can do that other than in that within that act.
Right. And, you know, Pope John Paul's, one of his main theses in the theology of the body is that our bodies make visible the invisible reality, right?
Mm.
And they were meant to transfer into time immemorial, right, this mystery hidden, right, in God. And so what is the mystery that our bodies reveal? And it's the call to communion. Right. We can look at, you know, obviously the Trinity is they're not sexual beings,
right.
But we can look at, you know, the Father who pours out his love to the Son, and the Son receives the Father's love, offers it back to the Father, and then the Father becomes the recipient of the love as well.
Right.
And then there's this reciprocity.
This flow.
Yes, this flow of the outpouring love, you know, that spirates the Holy Spirit.
Mm.
And we can look at, you know, the creation of the body and the very way in which God creates the body. Isn't that what our body, you know, is? It reveals, right? In the sense that, you know, the husband, you know, initiates the gift of himself, right? The woman, you know, obviously has to accept the gift and then offers herself back to him, right? And then he becomes the receiver. So notice how the receiver becomes the giver. The giver becomes the receiver, and the receiver becomes the giver. And the fruit of that love
flows from that.
Right. The fruit of that love is a third, is a child.
Right. Right. And in some ways, then you can look at the family as a human trinity.
Absolutely.
A reflection.
A reflection of the Trinity.
Or Christopher West is an icon.
Right.
And a living icon.
Absolutely. And von Balthasar says the most natural analogy of the Trinity is the man, woman, and child.
Mm-hmm.
And this vision of the human person reflecting the image and likeness of God as a communion of persons is one of the main important contributions that Pope John Paul offers to theology.
Right. So I want to go back to what we started on earlier there. Because to me this was in my sort of slow awakening to the beauty of the theology of the body was this notion, because we are body and spirit. Because God gave us the gift of sexuality within a marriage for two purposes. Maybe you can just describe a little bit each one what they mean. So we'll talk about the terms. It's unitive and procreative. So why don't you explain those two and why they must always be present in every
Well, unitive because it unites the two. It literally, the two become one in the act of sexual intercourse between a male and a female, right? So it's unitive. And that, again, is an expression of the words that they spoke at the altar. I mean, they literally, you know, become one.
One flesh.
In the sacramentally through the marriage and then physically in the body through the act of intercourse.
Right.
And procreation, you know, obviously to be open to life, that every act of sexual intercourse, right, should be open to life. That doesn't mean that it's going to it's going to happen because of the way God designed our bodies,
right?
And we can talk about that later. But that you're not doing anything to block that procreative ability, such as contraception in any way. Because why? Because then Pope John Paul says that when the two ends try to be separated, which is what contraception does, right? It tries to cut off that procreative unity, and make union more superior, which, that's what it tries to do. It ceases, Pope John Paul says, it ceases to be an act of love.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I think people don't maybe understand this, and I think partly because of catechesis, right? We need to continue to get the word out there and to preach this beautiful message of the theology of the body. But What happens in contraception is you're saying, well, I give myself to you, but I'm going to withhold my fertility.
Right.
So it's not a total gift of self, which is what you pledged at the altar.
Right.
It's a withholding of something. And it's actually a withholding of the very first blessing, which God bestows on Adam and Eve, right?
Be fruitful.
Be fruitful and multiply.
Right. You are saying, you're saying something different with your body than you're saying with your mouth, with your words. You know, I love you, but there's limits to my love. I'm not open to the transmission of love. I'm not open to the possibility I'm not even allowing the true union to come together because I don't want this potential of a new life to flow from it. I'm not participating in the Trinity.
There's something bigger than this. This is a dishonesty in what you're expressing with your bodies.
Right.
As Father McLaughlin says during our marriage prep, he says you're lying with your bodies when you do that, when you contracept.
Right.
You know, that's just not the way God planned for us. And sometimes you have to, you know, like later on, Rich and I will speak about this, but there was a time when we did contracept.
Right.
And we can tell you there absolutely is a difference, even if you can't, there's a tangible difference, even though
Maybe we could talk about that a little bit now. Maybe we'll talk about each of these topics within that.
Right.
So we're talking about unitive and the procreative being twin goals of sexual union within marriage. And that what are the things, you know, there's a number of different things that can kind of separate those two goals or people try to separate those two goals, and there's consequences of those. So let's talk about, in our case, you know, we how we live first the contraceptive life and the fact that there's an alternative to that and how we kind of discovered that. So maybe you want to start with how we...
Well, I think we lived the contraceptive life. It was a choice that we made. We had our reasons, like many people do who contracept. And it wasn't until really saying a little yes to the Lord that I want to follow you and get to know you better and realizing through the teachings of the Catholic Church, through this great teaching of theology of the body, that it is never permissible to contracept under any circumstances.
Right. We had lots of good excuses.
Yeah,
right?
we had, a lot of valid reasons. Right. But when you hear, so what does the Church say to those couples who do have valid reasons? And what are you supposed to do? Well, thankfully, you know, God did not create our bodies to conceive 24/7.
Right.
Actually, I think it's maybe a two-day period.
48 hours
that you could actually, conceive.
Of 48 hours a month.
Right. Yeah. So there is an umbrella term called natural family planning, which there are several different methods involved in that. But what it basically does is it helps you to recognize the fertility signals of your body, as well as general health of a woman's body. And in doing so, you're able to understand when your body is in a state of when it's ovulated and when fertility is possible,
right.
conception is possible.
Right.
And for a couple who wants to be honest in their relationship and live a life according to God's teachings, you would abstain from the marital act during your fertile period
right.
if you are in a position where welcoming another child would be very difficult.
Right.
That is something that should be prayerfully considered. It is an ongoing prayer.
Right.
And for us, it had to be, for a number of years, we were not able to really enter into that because of health reasons. But in doing so, you can have that honest relationship with each other and right. with the Lord. It does require sacrifice, but you know what? Sacrifice is good. Because when you develop sacrifice in the sexual relationship that you have, that spills over into other aspects of your relationship. And that is the great blessing. Much like when we were contracepting, that contracepting attitude spilled over into other aspects
right.
of our life,
yep.
and a relationship suffered.
Yeah.
That trust is just not at the same level. When you are opening up yourself to your spouse totally in that way, a very vulnerable way, there's that level of trust that just is there between each one of you that just can't be reached when you are in a contraceptive
right.
mode.
Right. And for me, and I know Junior may agree, you know, coming into the faith, you know, NFP, natural family planning, my first instinct as someone sort of looking from the outside is like, oh, this is the rhythm method,
right? Yeah.
You know, and that's like playing Russian roulette with three bullets in the gun or something. So
my husband, you gotta love him.
So, the idea was, when I actually sat and we actually went to the NFP class.
Which, dear friends, it took a year for him to agree to take
yes,
the class. And I never nagged him. I prayed
yes,
because we
did.
Must be the body of Christ, the face of Christ to each other. And since he was the one contracepting, I just prayed for a year through the intercession of our Blessed Mother. And he came around one day and just said, I'm willing to take that class now.
And when I did, and it's one of the other radio show hosts here, Dr. Les Rupesberger's. When he actually explained that he's very clinical, very a matter of fact, he's a doctor, of gynecology. When he explained it, and I'm a sort of a science logic guy, and I'm like, oh my God, this is not only this is beautiful in its expression of marital love, and because he did go into the theology of the body, but from a pure science standpoint, it works. You know, it's very scientific, very clinical. You can narrow that time frame down to a very narrow range where you're abstaining. You know, you're not, and you can be doing it with a high degree of confidence that if you want to achieve pregnancy during that period,
right,
you can.
It helps many women achieve pregnancy, right, when they desire that.
And if you want to avoid pregnancy, you can do it as well with the same technology. No stuff you have to buy other than a thermometer.
And not only that, but it's not harmful to a woman's health.
Right.
That's the best part. I mean, the dignity of a woman to be, friends nowadays, there are a lot of women on the pill, birth control pill, a lot of hormonal contraception going on out there. That's a heavy-duty drug to be on for a number of years, and who really knows what that's doing to the rest of your body? There's a lot of research out there that it's not doing some, cancer risks
research.
And other types of illnesses are coming from that, depression, lots of things. So in this green age that we live in where everybody wants to, eat more naturally, go organic, and be healthier, NFP is the way to go. That's natural. It's God's law.
No pollution in the water stream or anything. Yep,
yes,
yep.
It is the way God designed us to live.
And I think that's what we can appreciate is with natural family plans, we develop other forms of intimacy. So
yes,
it's not just sexual intimacy. There's emotional intimacy, intellectual intimacy, all these other forms. And really the beauty of the way God designed the body and the complementarity of the two. Mm. And also, I think, if sex is an expression of making a gift of yourself to someone else, sacramentally, and the two are becoming one. Well, what does it mean to be a gift of yourself? It means to want what's best for the other person.
Right.
Yes.
And Jesus comes and shows us really that type of love, that degree of love. And it's not wanting what's best for someone else, to want them to do damage to their bodies simply so that they can be ready to go whenever the urge comes along.
Right.
And the other thing is it teaches restraint. It teaches us to learn self-mastery, which is so important.
Because there'll be times in your life when I travel a lot for business, and that self-mastery helps. And there are times
when illness
and health reasons,
absolutely,
you're not going to be able to come together in that sacramental way. And it does teach you that discipline. It teaches you how to relate to your spouse in a non-sexual way, other forms of intimacy, as you mentioned.
Absolutely.
Some of our best conversations are during those abstaining times of the month. Do you know what I'm saying? It's you definitely develop another level, like you said, of intimacy.
Right, right. Let's just remind everyone that you're listening to Deacon Dialogues today. I'm your host, Deacon Rich Napoli, joined by my wife, Janet. And as our guest today, we have June Michwijik, who is an expert on the theology of the body, and she's helping us to understand and unpack a little bit the mystery of the gift of sexuality that God has given us. So, June, I want to go back again, because for me, again, this was, to see this same teaching applied into that sex is for the unity of the couple, to draw them together in a permanent way, and for the openness to the transmission of life, the procreative aspect of sex, and that those two always have to be present in every sexual act. We saw one example where if you try to separate, I want to be union with my spouse, but I don't want to be procreating, that has some consequences, both physical consequences, the contraceptive attitude kind of, drawing that wedge between
an
you that I'm not really
right, and that
connected.
It really ceases to become an act of love.
Right, right.
In Pope John Paul's words.
An authentic witness to the love of Christ.
Right.
Right.
So let's look at another example then, because, that same principle, unitive and procreative, let's look at another example where people try to split those. So to me, what the opposite of contraception in this case is in vitro, fertilization,
right,
because here you have an example where we want to procreate, we want to have a child.
Sure.
But we're not going to come together in a way that's natural, unitive, and sharing us in that physical union of body and soul.
Right. The church, in one of the documents on this issue, says that every child has the right to be the fruit of an act of love between a husband and a wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is beautiful, because not the result of a technological manipulation.
Right.
Or through technology, and the problem with in vitro fertilization, and a lot of people just don't know this.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know the teaching. They don't know that
right.
this is something that
right.
that is not, okay. And nor do they understand the why. But first of all, like you said, you're not uniting in that act of love from which should bring forth a child, right? It's simply done through
machines and tubes, and,
right? Yep. And there's a danger. There's a danger in all of that. Mm-hmm.
Besides the low success rate.
Absolutely. And, you know, the church is very clear that, sure, we can use technology, and there's different forms of technology that are morally permissible. But the critical determinant is, does this thing that you're doing, okay, or technological means you're using, does it assist in the sexual act,
right,
or does it replace it?
Right.
And if it replaces it, then the church says no, because
right,
of this understanding of the inseparable connection between unitive and procreative aspect of what the body speaks in the act of sex,
right, right,
marital love.
Right, right. And I love that line, that a child has the right to, yes, be born from a union of a loving man and woman.
Right. And I do want to introduce the website, naprotechnology.com, mm-hmm, because it's an excellent website if you are a woman who is suffering from infertility and really do, you know, are struggling and you need to get help. There are a lot of different medical,
morally permissible,
medical type of treatments available. In fact, there's a survey that I was reading earlier today where women who were not able to conceive through IVF later on through NAPRO technology, where they actually look at the reason, the underlying reason why you can't conceive, fix that so that you can. That at least 20% of women were able to then later conceive through NAPRO technology who absolutely failed a number of times with IVF. And that is,
right,
plus it does have a higher
success rate
even in the normal levels when you look at that, like,
yes,
60% versus 30%.
Yes, so, and it's absolutely wonderful. And yeah, I've referred many, many couples there that were really trying to have a child and trying to conceive and were not able to. And the success rates were incredible. And through natural means, through everything,
right,
that's morally permissible. And I think
it's very undignified what you have to go through when you go through, you know, the process of in vitro.
Right.
I mean,
well,
I've heard a lot of women say,
yeah,
not only that, but I mean, it's very clinical and just removed from the natural act so much that it's very difficult, especially, you know, when it doesn't succeed and you go through it over and over again.
Right.
Even women who didn't end up having a child through NAPRO technology later on said they felt so loved and embraced that even going through that process of the NAPRO technology, they just felt even better about their marriage and even stronger going on to then adopt. Do you know?
Yes.
It's just that whole process of treating the whole person in their dignity was so important to them.
Right. And one of the things that was predicted in Humanae Vitae by Pope Paul VI is he said, you know, we would begin to treat our bodies as machines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, contraception became readily available. And so contraception really paves the way for the in vitro fertilization, you know, where we just see our body as a machine instead of sex,
right,
as the beautiful gift of self.
Mm-hmm. And also we have surrogacy going on.
Right.
Which is another way where we're looking at a woman's body as a machine and hiring her out for that purpose. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, where does it end?
Right. And you know, I think when you mentioned NAPRO as a way, you know, to open up and help a woman
yes,
you know, become more fertile. But you're doing it in a way that's cooperating with God's will.
Right.
And even if it turns out, I mean, everybody, you know, most marriage families want children at some point. And if they can't have children, you still are called to submit yourself to God's will and say, God's got a better plan. And maybe that plan, if NAPRO doesn't work, maybe that plan means adoption. Maybe there's a young boy or girl out there that is in desperate need, and we know there are many. They're in desperate need of a family environment. And maybe your calling is to help one of those.
Right.
And to be open to that, right?
In a way, that child helps you. I mean, it's just
it's
almost like that flowing of a blessing going back.
But so it's not by saying you can't, if you're not being blessed to have children of your own, that doesn't mean that God's, you know, disappointing
you
or punishing
you.
He's pointing you into another direction.
Absolutely.
And by cooperating, and NAPRO is a way to help cooperate, but just in general, that openness to God's plan for you.
Yes.
Yeah, and I also think another point that the church talks about is, you know, a child is a gift, you know,
yes,
and it's received, right? And I think, you know, and this is just our culture, you know, where everything's so materialistic. I'm going to have it at all costs because I want it. And it's a beautiful thing to want a child, but it's not a right. It's a gift.
Yeah, right. And you know, unfortunately, it is becoming, you're right, in this material society, it is becoming more of a product where as you know, people are starting to, abort based on gender preferences,
right.
Based on characteristic preferences. I want this boy to be tall. I want him to be athletic.
Yes. Right.
And because if you view it as a product rather than a gift, well, then why wouldn't I want the biggest, the best, the tallest, the smartest, and so on?
Absolutely.
And look what's going on in China. I mean, Pope Paul VI, he had a vision that governments would be coercive in family planning, and look what's happening with the UN, with population control, and in China.
The story of that woman, a poor woman in China that was dragged in.
Yes,
I'm sure she wasn't
the
only one
police,
dragged
yes.
in by the, because she wanted to have a second baby, and she was forced to have an abortion.
And she was a fully formed child.
Yeah. Anyway, but so back to the unitive and procreative. So we saw an example where contraception kind of breaks it and says, I want unity but not procreation.
Mm.
In vitro kind of goes the other way, says, I want procreation but not, I'm not coming together. I think there's, you know, we can go on the list. I mean, mm-hmm. homosexuality, you know, is another one of those ones where, you know, we're all created equal in the dignity of God and in the image and likeness of God. Those with same-sex attraction are, you know, feel compelled to, you know, a different choice. And yet, you know, the church looks at that, and although we reach out in love with them, we recognize that, you know, once again, there's a violation of that unitive and procreative aspects that God is calling to us in a sexual act, right? So maybe you...
Right, well, because, one, they can't become one sacramentally.
Right.
And it's not open to life.
Right.
You know, it's not open to life. And again, you know, love wants to give itself away. Love wants to, I mean, look at God. God is being itself. And what does he do? In his love, he creates us.
It generates.
Yeah. Right. And so, this is one of the things I love about the theology of the body, is that it provides a context in which to understand the beautiful teaching about why we have a body, what the body means, what the body expresses, right? What is our purpose in life?
Right.
And when understood, and I know I've explained this to so many people that had issues on all these different areas of sexual, you know, in vitro, contraception. And when it's been explained to them, they've been like, wow,
I didn't know.
And you know, and even on the natural law perspective, like you and I were talking about earlier, just, you know, showing through a perspective of reason, right? You know, why certain things aren't good, like with contraception. I mean, you can look at all the side effects, you know, to the woman's body, right? To see these things just through reason alone.
And just the natural complementarity of a man's woman and a man's body and a woman's body that isn't present when it's two men or two women. If just at a natural law basis, you know, we're not built that way, and so you don't even need necessarily all this to see that, you know, that is a union that, you know, is something different than what God intended, you know, that, so there's another example of, you know, that same principle, unitive and procreative, being sort of dissected and somebody's trying to get around it, if you will, and yet God's calling us back to that sacramental, that beautiful imagery of a man and woman come together sacramentally in marriage.
Right. And again, you know, looking at how our bodies, you know, and how this communion of persons, this call, the complementary relationship of the male-female, this call to communion, really reveals something about God, right? The Trinitarian mystery. But and even going further, because Pope John Paul just doesn't leave us there. He's so awesome. You know, he talks about, you know, Christ is the bridegroom of the church, and the church is the bride. Mm-hmm. And we see this bridegroom imagery again. Mm-hmm. And what does he do for his bride? He lays down his life for his bride.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it means to make a gift of yourself to someone else, right? We see St. Paul beautifully commenting, you know, love is patient, it's kind, right? It's not jealous, it's not boastful.
Right.
Right. And really, I think at heart is just this wounded notion of love. You know, that's what happened in the Garden of Eden. You know, we were able to love with God's own love. But when we questioned the gift, which was God's love, right, and start to think, oh, he's a tyrant. Right. And then that led,
we could, you
know,
do better.
Right. And then, you know, the temptation of Satan in the garden. And then that leads them to sin. Right. First sin, pride. And what happens is we can't love as God loves anymore. Now I don't want to say we can't, because with God's grace and through His death and resurrection, you know, we can get really close as it was in before original sin. That's what mm-hmm. Pope John Paul tells us. Right. So with God's grace, we can love like that.
Right. You know, just to get alert our listeners again, you're listening to Deacon Dialogues. I'm your host, Deacon Rich Napoli, here with my beautiful wife, Janet. And we have our guest today, June Matwijczyk, who is an expert on theology of the body in our diocese in Philadelphia and parishioner at St. Andrew's. And she's here to help us understand the mystery and the beauty of sexual union within marriage and the whole theology of the body. I want to ask a question that I get a lot of times. When mm-hmm. So you go through this explanation of unitive and procreative, and that, you know, every act has to be open to that. And then the question comes back, well, why is that only available in marriage? Why can't a man and a woman come together and be open to life and you know, drawing on sex of the unity of the couple? Isn't that it? I mean, so, you know, why is sex only reserved for marriage?
Right, and I think that goes back to, again, sex is you're putting into bodily expression what you've spoken at the altar, that I've given myself totally to you.
There's no commitment.
Right, there's no commitment. You haven't given yourself totally, right? Either person can walk away whenever they want, right? Right? It's not sacramental. They haven't become one, right, through the sacrament.
Because Jesus
right.
teaches that marriage is indissoluble.
Right, where the two actually become one, right?
Right?
And so in all the different areas that you're talking about, when people say, well, you know, kind of like, well, I don't get what the big deal is, one of those things is missing. You know, you haven't given yourself totally or faithfully or fruitfully or freely.
Right.
You know, a lot of times with premarital sex, especially among the teens, it's not always that they're giving themselves freely. Sometimes they feel forced. They feel like, I need to do this to show him that I love him, or to show her that I love her, or, you know, whatever.
They feel society expects it of them,
right,
too.
Right, right. And we're all just really desperately seeking love. Mm-hmm. We all are.
Right.
But we seek it in the wrong way.
And that's why it's so important for the families to witness the great beauty mm-hmm. of a husband and a wife in that marital union. And for fathers to really embrace their daughters in a way that fills them up, where they don't have to be looking for another young man to praise them and to admire them, that they let their bodies mature and their mind mature at the same rate, so that when they do go out and date at a reasonable age, which I think maybe about 17 nowadays might be reasonable, and only if it's for the purpose of marriage, where you're dating. You don't date just for social, oh, let's just go have a date. You date with the prospect of one day possibly marrying this person.
Yeah, and you date to find out.
Absolutely.
If that's the person.
Right.
Otherwise, just go be friends.
Right.
Go for soda together or to the movie. You know, and you don't have to try things out too far before you decide whether or not you want to commit to this person. It's so important to think of these things before your kids go too far in life. But it must be witnessed within the home, the beauty of the marriage, what it means, so that the kids can aspire to that.
Right, right. You know, I often say, you know, when we do our pre-Canaan classes, that sex is this wonderful gift, kind of in some ways like fire is. You know, and when used properly, fire heats our homes, cooks our food. It's a great source of warmth for us. But when misused, well, what happens? It burns our house down. It kills us. It maims us. And that, in a way, sex outside of marriage has that same destructive capability, that, you know, it can warp itself and actually cause great emotional damage, you know, through, you know, fallen spirits. I don't know how to say it. But you've talked about some of the counseling you had to give, or the pain you saw in some of the youngsters, that when you told them about the beauty of sex within marriage and God's plan for us, that you saw sort of a woundedness on their face.
Yeah, so often when I taught about the high school level and now even at the college level, as I explain all of this, you know, I see the hurt, and women will be very upfront with me and say, wow, you know, I felt used. I felt like it was just, you know, I thought he loved me, but I guess he really didn't, you know. And for the men, the hurt, you know, for them too.
Yeah.
And even the men, some of the men, you know, would say to me, wow, I did use a woman. I have to own that. It was all about the sex for me. It wasn't about her, you know. And it works both ways. You know, I don't want to.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But the woundedness, and I think, you know, God doesn't punish, right? But nature does. Like, our bodies mm-hmm. are given to us, and, mm-hmm. and they work in a certain way. And when we don't use them in the way they were created to be used, right, it's not God punishing us, but nature punishes us. Right?
Well, it's not even punishing. It's a natural course of events.
Right.
There are consequences for actions in nature. You know, you walk off a cliff, you're gonna
right.
fall.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're right. You know, sex. When you start having, you know, sex with outside of marriage and lots of partners. Well, there's consequences to that.
Right.
Besides just pregnancy, there's
absolutely sexually transmitted diseases. Yeah. Someone then can be like
infertility.
Right. Yeah. Infertility, and then the emotional heartache that you were talking about, yeah. which leads some people to suicide.
Right.
And so I think again, this is what's so beautiful about the teaching, because all of these things make sense when you can view it through the lens of really the ecology of the body.
Right. And the notion, you know, we're going to talk in a minute just about where else can people look for information here, but I, you know, one of the things I wound up actually was my final thesis at the seminary was on conjugal chastity, because people, you know, a lot of what we talked about is sort of, you know, just chastity meaning abstaining from sex outside of marriage, but there's a call that chastity is a misused term. It's really, you know, integrating your sexuality within your chosen vocation of life. So, and that chastity has meaning inside of a marriage as well. People kind of look at conjugal chastity as sort of an oxymoron, but it's not. You're actually called to be chaste within your marriage through, you know, obviously not being adulterous. That's
right.
An obvious one, but also, you know, not viewing pornography. That's a rampant issue in our society today.
For women now too, not
and
just men.
Women and men.
Right.
But that is a form of a violation of chastity within mm-hmm. a marriage. And contraception, as we talked about earlier, is really a violation of chastity because you're not giving yourself fruitfully and faithfully.
And I just want to make one point about men. We need strong spiritual leaders within the family. Men out there, be the husband to your wife that you want your daughter one day to marry. There is nothing greater for a daughter to say to their father than, "Dad, I want to marry a man just like you." Mm. Be that man.
Mm-hmm. Right, and we so need great father role models and great husbands, you know, and they are out there,
they
right?
Are.
They are out there, just like there are women out there that are living this, you know? But also, just to comment on what you said, yeah, chastity, you know, they don't think about it within marriage, but, you know, not, and what does Scripture say? Pope John Paul points out, he goes, you know, to Scripture, and he says, you know, not even to look at someone with lust in their heart,
right.
you know, that
right.
just
yes.
even looking at someone else.
Right.
You know,
catch
it
yourself.
Is wrong.
Catch yourself,
right.
And you know, you will. You will catch yourself. Confession is a great sacrament.
Absolutely.
And just, I would say a prayer to Saint Michael the Archangel whenever I'm getting myself in trouble in any area of my life.
Yeah.
He works on me.
Yeah,
right.
The sin is not that the thought pops into your head.
Right, right.
It's
acting
your response to that
yeah.
that thought.
Right.
What
it's engaging in that.
It's
right.
Engaging
right.
And yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that again, you know, people say, "Oh, well, that's okay. I didn't know that was wrong." You know,
right.
And again, with God's grace.
Oh, yeah.
With God's
yes,
grace.
Yes.
Right,
amen to
right.
that.
And there's, you know, there's wonderful sources that people can turn to, maybe that are struggling with that kind mm-hmm. of chastity. There's a number of websites. There's a book out, Queen of Heart, which is a beautiful book, like almost a meditative workshop for mm-hmm. those struggling with habitual sins of impurity,
mm-hmm.
How to draw them closer, how to get them to break that habit
right.
that can be so easy to fall into and draw closer to God through Mary. In a way that, you know, is respectful of your body.
Absolutely. And I would also add, you know, Mary. Mary is our greatest help
model, yes.
and aid. And she is the model of virtue. She is the model of purity. And she is there to help us.
Mm.
Right.
She's our mom.
She is.
Moms never fail.
Right. She's a perfect example of what a human being can be in this world, an ultimate sign of purity to all of us.
And if you haven't read the book by Christopher West, very simple, basic book. It's only about 150 pages, Theology of the Body for Beginners. Run out and get one.
Christopher West has just been, we're very blessed to have him in our lives. He's a great sort of
yes.
interpreter that can take the beauty of the theology that's written by Pope John Paul and make it available to everyone to interpret and enjoy.
There's no fluff in this book. Every sentence is meaty. Another book that I buy and I hand out to every teenager that I see is...
And everyone that ever dated our daughters.
Right, and son. The
and
good
son.
News about Sex and Marriage, again by Christopher West. And what I like about this, it's like 100 questions or so, questions and answers. They're short. The kids can pick up the book at any point and start reading, and they are intrigued. And I think it's an excellent book to get conversations going. I always say this is good dinner conversation.
Right, right. For those struggling with same-sex attraction, I'm not sure we didn't talk about it beforehand, but the Courage website, CourageRC.net,
right.
It's a great
resource
for those that are struggling with same-sex attraction or have families that are you're dealing with that. It's a call to explain God's teaching and to invite them to a call to live it
right.
in a way that's consistent with God's call. Now you have
a website.
Website
information to give us.
That you have the iCatholicAcademy.com?
Sure. The iCatholicAcademy.com, anybody wants to reach me or has questions, that's a great vehicle to use. I started the iCatholic Academy basically to teach people about the faith.
Right, right. And
and there's opportunities maybe in the future of being able to maybe take a class by you?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I post them on the website. I did Theology of the Body and Christian Ethics.
Okay.
And if people want to reach out to you by phone, I think you're willing to share your number as well?
Yes, and that is 267-207-9769.
Right. There's, a wealth of resources, as you mentioned. If you just go online to and type in Theology of the Body, you will find thousands of resources. Or go to Catholic.com and type in Theology of the Body there. You'll get all kinds of good Catholic resources that can help you understand this beautiful gift that God has given us. Did you want to,
we have a last minute or so. I know that there's a program that you're involved in called Endow.
Right, Endow, educating on the nature and dignity of women. And I run Endow studies out of my house, and we'll be doing Thomas Aquinas in the spring.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Okay, friends, go and get the book, Theology of the Body for Beginners. Read it, live it, share it with your families. And renew those wedding vows. That's my last word.
Yeah, all right. I'll remember that. Well, thank you all for listening to us. It's been, as you said, a wonderful show. This is a very exciting topic. You know, a way that you can, live God's plan for you to show that the Catholic Church is not out of touch with today's world. In fact, it's calling you to something much better than this world has to offer.
Thank you, June, so much.
You're so
for
welcome.
Being our guest, and we hope to have you again in the future.
Thank you.
And we'll be on this time next month, the fourth Friday of every month, to talk about another topic. I'm not even sure we have the next one lined up, but we'll work on that.
The encore is on Sunday morning at 2, and also the program will be archived next week. God bless
you. Thank you very much, and God bless.
Thank you for listening to Deacon Dialogues. We hope you will join us each month at this time, the fourth Friday at 4 p.m., or for the encore the following Sunday at 2 p.m.